The views and opinions expressed on this show are strictly those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily represent those of our sponsors. Ha!
Welcome to the Small Business Hour with your host, Mark Dio. It's 60 minutes of red-hot talk to help you develop your small business.
The Small Business Hour is brought to you by CBeyond, the last communications company a small business will ever need.
All right, folks, welcome to the Small Business Hour right here on the SBA Network. My name is Mark Dio, and of course, joining me, the inimitable Matthew Walker. We're coming to you live from Los Angeles, and of course, we are your small business advocates. Our show, as you know, if you've been listening, is dedicated to helping you to become more positive, more productive, and a lot more profitable in your business. Hopefully to take your small business to a larger business or just to be more successful in the market niche you've actually decided to compete in. And of course, every week we bring you experts and we bring you expert advice. And of course, this week is no different. A number of topics that are both inspiring and educational, and sometimes downright infuriating. Today, we'll be talking about how busy work is getting in the way of doing great work. And of course, one of our guests, will be Michael Stanier. He's a Rhodes Scholar, author of the book Do More Great Work. We'll be talking with him about that. Also, Barry Maltz will be on the show with BAM!
Now, is Mr. Stanier our first Rhodes Scholar as a guest?
I think we've had a Rhodes Scholar before, actually.
Really?
You know, well, yes, we have.
I don't recall, yes. But that's we've impressive.
Yes, we've had a Rhodes Scholar, and I can't remember his name. He's a PhD, but I didn't want to say that. I didn't want to make him feel in our interview, which you'll hear, Matthew. I didn't want to make him feel less than by thinking. You know, there was another Rhodes Scholar on the Small Business Hour. But yeah, nevertheless, very interesting conversation, very interesting discussion, I should say, on doing great work. And, of course, talking about great customer service with Barry Maltz. I love the book. BAM! I love the book. I like to say it when you least, BAM! Expect it. I feel like I have Tourette's. I feel like I have Tourette's. But nevertheless, talking about what is it that constitutes great service and how can we create great service. So both of those guests we'll be talking to in later segments. Also, Matthew, I wanted to say, and we have a lot of great guests coming. By the way, Harvey McKay will be coming on the show, of course, helping him promote his book. Very interesting book for Harvey McKay, talking about, you know, how to get a great job. A lot of people unemployed today, so... Yeah, kind of interesting. So Harvey will be coming on, I think, March 8th or something like that, or I don't know, sometime in March. And all kinds of good guests we have coming on the show. But I read an article here that really did sort of get my goat, Matthew. Mm-hmm. It was in between the Tiger Woods interview that I saw, which really was kind of sad. It even made me sad. Even if you don't like Tiger Woods, you gotta be like, jeez.
Or you could have just been like me and laughed at the whole thing. But
probably, yeah, you probably did. You probably, but you're not a golfer, so you don't.
Well, no, I just always found it annoying that Tiger Woods.
The world.
I found it annoying that he would win every single thing he entered. That was almost
it was good
for about 5 years. He would just win everything, and I'm kind of like, all right, let's have somebody else win something now. And Well, stepping aside.
If you're the best, you're the best, right? I mean, it's up to everyone else to become better. You can't hate him for winning.
I can.
You hate Tiger Woods for winning.
Oh. You can. It's not logical, but you can.
yeah, you can. Nevertheless, if that irritated you, listen to this one. Pretty tough to get a loan these days, especially if you're a small business owner. Even though there are 27 million small businesses in this country, and even though they collectively contribute to better than half of our gross domestic product, it's extremely difficult to get a loan. And many small businesses are going out of business. In fact, the number of bankruptcies in the first quarter of small businesses have doubled. Recent statistics demonstrate that 42% of small business folks are not confident about the future. And frankly, 70% have borrowed money. 70% of those who have borrowed money, I should say, have borrowed money from their home. They've actually taken equity out of their home or their home equity line of credit.
And we talked last week about people cashing out their IRAs.
Cashing out their IRAs. So small businesses are having trouble surviving. At the same time, larger businesses have been convicted or, let's say, accused of, if not proven to be guilty of, a lot of this unsavory activities, like CEOs and directors of boards taking money and, you know, inappropriately vacations and, you know, using company planes for private time and, you know, extorting money. Some of them have gone to jail. We can mention names if we want to. Bankers.
Many more should go to
jail. Insurance companies have gone to jail for doing this stuff. Sort of senior executives, some of them. And some of them are just working for a living. So I can't say all senior executives, all members of boards, all owners, all large shareholders of corporations are crooks. But certainly, you know, we don't hear that happening with small businesses at all, interestingly enough. Mm-hmm. Yet, Matthew, and this will really get you, it is easier to get a loan for a big firm than it is for a small firm. In fact, there are many large firms that are literally stocking up on, you know, basically cheap credit right now. They've got good credit, right? Interest, you know, good interest rates. Mm-hmm. Big companies are borrowing money even though they don't need money because the banks can't get rid of the money and they're not giving it to the small businesses. Now, understand, these are the same banks that we gave taxpayer money to and on the morons in Washington – actually gave money to these banks.
Mm-hmm.
And now they have too much money. The banks have too much of our tax money. I think they should give it back to us. But no. God forbid anybody in Washington suggest that.
Yep.
So now, if I went and I was a big corporation, which I'm not, it would be easier for me to get a $150 million loan than to get, let's say, a small business that needs to buy a building or needs to buy some new manufacturing equipment, a $15 million loan or a $1.5 million loan. I'm not saying that. That is Phil Isom, the Chicago-based director of the Financial Advisory Services Division of Deloitte & Touche. Deloitte & Touche, I should say. Mm-hmm. Okay, which is, I think, the largest accounting firm in the world, or one of the largest.
Yeah, probably they're, if not the biggest, they're at least in the top
second,
two or three. Yeah.
So larger companies, apparently, according to him, have had more success in the last 6 months than have smaller companies. And this is supposedly the trend that we're supposed to look towards for the future. So there's this unheard of interest rate. I mean, you know, we're talking 4%, 5%, and 6%.
Wow.
That is available to these larger companies, whereas a small company, you know, you're lucky if you can get something at 8% or 9% or 10%.
Probably more likely 14%, 15%, 16% instead of 4%, 5%, or 6%.
And a lot of businesses are using their credit cards, or we had mentioned, of course, IRAs or mortgage. And so that loan is going to cost them 15 or 20%. So what's happening is that these large businesses and these big banks are becoming wealthy and actually rife with cash. They got to get rid of the cash. They have so much cash, they have to get rid of it. And the 27 million small businesses can't feed themselves. What in the heck is going on in this country? I don't know. I don't even know who to appeal to about all this. But what I do know is that we small business people need to be angry. Do I sound angry, Matthew?
I think you do. You're upset. I think rightfully so. Because it's a situation where it's just, you know, again, the big companies going in and they sort of get to really just dictate how things are going to be for the entire country.
So some people think this is going to change. These well-capitalized institutions are obviously looking to make new loans, while banks that have failed, you know, to keep their balance sheets, you know, clean and all that, are stressed out. So there are some folks that are saying that potentially we're going to start to see the separation of both of these type of banks in the future. I don't know. I mean, I don't know about that. You know, there are banks. We talked last week about a small bank. I forget where they were, Matthew. I think they were in Georgia or something, or Alabama or something like that.
Somewhere in the South. I can't remember.
Yeah, and they actually were the fourth or fifth largest lender of ARC loans.
Despite being the 400th or 500th largest bank.
Yeah, a very tiny bank.
They're like five branches, I think. Yeah.
And actually, that's helped the bank to, you know, actually get new depositors and sort of build their, you know, equity base, and certainly position in the marketplace. But ultimately, you know, a lot of those small banks have gone out of business. So I'm interested to know what our listeners think about this, Matthew. I mean, you can do your homework. It's not just me, you know, yelling and screaming here. You can check out this article. Probably went on the wire and is available a lot of places. But this article is right here on Cranes, okay? Chicago Business, Cranes. And if you just go to, I guess, you know, cranes.com or chicagobusiness.com, you'll see this article. And I'm sure if you did a little bit of a search, you could probably find five or six articles just like this. So I'm interested to know what some of our listeners think about this, and what is it that you think we should do? One of the things I'm going to do is talk to my congressperson about this. I'm actually going to see my congressperson at an upcoming event, Matthew, here in Torrance, and I'm going to actually approach them about this, or at least I'm going to give them a copy of this or get their email and email this to them and ask them to take some action. And I know this particular congressperson sits on a small business committee in Washington. So they, in fact, have some, you know, have some ability to articulate on this if they so choose.
Yeah.
And I'm going to do my part to try to get them to choose to do that. And I would like you to do the same, folks. So, again, the Mark Dio rant today. Please let me know what you think. And again, we'll get into some other stuff here today. But curious on what our listeners think, just go to smallbusinesshour.com, marketmarkdio.com, send me an email, tell me your thoughts. We've got a lot more happening here on the Small Business Hour, so go nowhere because we will be right back.
The Small Business Hour is brought to you by CBeyond, the last communications company a small business will ever need.
CBeyond, big solutions for growing your small business. For over 10 years, CBeyond has provided small businesses with the communication tools for success. We're proud to offer services such as local and long-distance voice, mobile, and broadband internet access, along with enhanced features like voicemail, email, web hosting, data backup, file sharing, VPN, and more. So as your business grows, we've got you covered. CBeyond, the last communications company a small business will ever need.
Winning means sinking more shots, blowing away the competition, coming in first. Being second might have been okay for mom, but today, coming in second just gets you a pat on the back and a, hey, thanks for trying. Dale Carnegie Training gives you and your people the skills you need to win. For salespeople, how to be more strategic, earn and keep that important client. From prospecting to information gathering to negotiations to closing. For managers, it's how to win the commitment of your team. Build teamwork and loyalty like never before. A company where people excel. Dale Carnegie Training isn't some boot camp with a drill instructor who breaks you down and leaves you in a daze. And it isn't going back to school for years and pulling all-nighters while you're still trying to do your regular job. It's the right training for the real world that teaches you how to win more often. It works and it sticks. Call now, 562-427-1040. Face it, as a business owner, manager, or salesperson, you're paid for results, winning results. So make winning a habit. Call 562-427-1040. Come on, you were made to win. 562-427-1040.
Are compliance issues keeping you up at night? Are you worried that your labor law posters may be out of date? Do you even know how to protect your business from fines of thousands of dollars? Without a dedicated compliance department, it's hard to remain on top of the constantly evolving labor law legislation at the state and federal level. That's why the experts at Compliance Poster Company provide their clients with a dedicated research department. The innovator of the all-on-one compliance poster, Compliance Poster Company has simplified labor law compliance. Just hang one poster and you're in compliance with all federal and state labor law mandates. Then when labor laws change, you'll receive an email to let you know and your restless nights. Call the compliance experts at Compliance Poster Company today at 1-800-817-7678. That's 1-800-817-7678. Once again, 1-800-817-7678. Or on the web at complianceposter.com.
The Small Business Hour is brought to you by CBeyond, the last communications company a small business will ever need.
All right, folks, welcome back to the Small Business Hour right here on the SBN Network. My name is Mark Dio. Joining me, of course, the inimitable Matthew Walker. We're coming to you live from Los Angeles. And again, your business advocates, very excited today to be talking about customer service. Could be a very difficult thing to provide today with all of the competition that we have. We have with us an expert in the area of customer service, and particularly an expert in the area of small business customer service. And his name is Barry Maltz. He has his third book out, which is called BAM, Delivering Customer Service in a Self-Serve World. I have to say that BAM in that way, I feel like I'm Emerald. Nevertheless, Barry is a nationally recognized expert entrepreneur, given hundreds of presentations to audiences of many thousands of people. He was appointed by the Illinois governor in 2005 to serve as the chairman of the board for the Institute of Entrepreneurship and Education. Let's have him been on a lot of radio, television shows, as his own radio show, I guess, now. But let's welcome to the show Barry Maltz. Barry, welcome to the Small Business Hour. It's great to have you here today.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely, absolutely. So this third book now, BAM, Delivering Customer
Service. I love when you say that. I'm hoping Emerald's going to
see
me.
I love to say that.
It'd be great publicity, don't you think?
I love to say that. I've always wanted to say that. BAM!
There you go.
Delivering Customer Service in a Self-Serve World. Are you an Emerald fan? Is that where the BAM came from? Or
no, BAM really stands for Bust a Myth. I think to some people, they don't want to hear another book on customer service because there are 82,000 books out there on Amazon on customer service. And we want to shock people for them to realize how great customer service, especially for small businesses, is really the only sustainable competitive advantage there is. So we got to shock them into it.
Okay, okay. Well, that definitely gets their attention, right? So now, I know that you had a couple of other books out, but this is really kind of the first book that you have out now, specifically about customer service. And you say customer service in a self-serve world. Where does that come from? What's the meaning of that subtitle?
Well, things have really changed with customer service. And I mean, it used to be that we always interacted with people who represented companies. Now more and more, for your customer service needs, you're interacting with perhaps a kiosk at the airport or self-checkout at Jewel. Or when you log on to the company's website, it's a totally different experience. So the nature of customer service has changed. And in fact, you actually can get a better customer service experience if the company puts time and energy into it.
Now, When you look at customer service challenges and issues, have they changed over the years, or is this pretty much our businesses, particularly smaller businesses, still facing the same kind of customer service challenges?
Well, I think the ante has really been upped because with the Great Recession, you know, there are a lot few consumer dollars out there. So I've actually seen customer service improve in the last couple of years, and also with companies like Southwest Airlines, Apple, Amazon, Zappos, these companies really have raised the bar in customer service. When I go and buy something from Amazon.com and I log on, they call me by name, they call me Barry, they suggest which things I might want to buy based on what I bought in the past. And you know something? When I walk into a retail store like Gap, if I've been there many times before, I don't forget the experience I've had on Amazon. I kind of want them to call me by name, and if I've been a frequent customer, I want them to remember. So the bar actually has been raised with technology in recent years.
So that creates some challenges, but it also creates some opportunities, doesn't it?
I think it creates some incredible opportunities. I think it is so much easier to offer great customer service now because with the tools that are available, you can follow up with clients or customers a lot easier. You can see what clients and customers are saying about you, rants or raves on Twitter and Facebook, and you can respond. The other day, I sent something fairly negative about Sears, about one of my appliances, on Twitter, and within an hour, Sears was back to me saying, hey, we're really sorry you had that concern. How can we help you? Where can we call you at? And to me, that was amazing.
Wow, it is amazing. And that seems to be happening more and more. I guess last week, Matthew, on the show, we were talking about Kentucky Fried Chicken. I know I've got this all screwed up.
It was Popeye's chicken.
I know, and it was probably 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
What are those guys?
Something similar happened, actually, with Popeyes, right? Somebody, did they find
something? We'd seen a story about somebody who had posted a message about how they were at lunch and somebody stole one of their biscuits. And somebody from Popeyes Chicken actually tweeted them back on Twitter and offered them a coupon for a free biscuit if they came into Popeyes Chicken. And it sort of wound up snowballing into a lot of publicity for Popeyes over it.
So I guess the point here is, you know, folks, listeners, is when we have a customer service issue, and if we have our ears and eyes out, that is, we have our minions over on Twitter and the social networks on LinkedIn and stuff like that, you know, listening and watching what's happening, we have an opportunity to actually enhance our brand. Let's talk about that. How can customer service be brand enhancing, Barry?
Well, it's interesting. I want to go back to one other point, Mark. First, is I think that the way social media has also changed things, you no longer can really control the conversation that's going on out there about you. I mean, Amazon pretty much stopped this, and eBay, when they implemented this peer review network where you would say, how was that purchase from that eBay buyer, or what did you think of that product? So the conversation's happening all around us, and you really can't control it. From a branding standpoint, I think it's an incredible opportunity. For example, one of my friends was flying JetBlue the other day, and he had a real concern about JetBlue. It was late, or they canceled his ticket or something like that, and he commented on Twitter about it. Well, guess what? JetBlue didn't get back to him, but it's almost all wrong to do. So he's like, guess what? I know your stock. You know, there's a flight leaving from St. Louis that you can get on and sell us if you want to. So they were jumping on the bandwagon and getting involved in the conversation. So it really improved their brand that they were really there for customer service. And again, I can't stress this enough, in a world where there is no geographic boundaries, Mark, customer service really is the only sustainable competitive advantage because you can really get your product from any place.
Right. So if you're a CEO of a company, let's say a relatively small company, but let's say a reasonably sized, you know, let's say a $5 or $10 million company. This is a big big hump of $5 million companies actually emerging in the 27 million small businesses here in this country. So a reasonably sized company has somewhere between 20 and 50 employees. So how can you enhance your customer service? Or how can you take advantage of this opportunity? How can you take this to set yourself apart? What can you do? Everything's already been done, right?
No, everything's done. I think that we do customer service really bad because we just paid lip service to customer service. We believe in all these myths like, you know, the customer's always right. We'll under-promise and over-deliver. But the CEO has to really do four things. And that's why I like this new reality TV show called Undercover Boss. Have you seen it, Mark?
I haven't seen it. Undercover Boss. You see it, Matt?
I have
Undercover
not watched
Boss,
it yet, but
like
it's
the
sort
CEO
of the new
of yeah, the CEO of Waste Management will go and he'll apply for a job and he'll work out in the field of like Waste Management or something like that. So he gets there on the front line. I think as a CEO, first you got to think about what are we doing right and what are we doing wrong for our customers. And then the next thing you have to think about is what does customer service from an economic standpoint really mean to our business? If we're not going to make more money doing better customer service, it makes no sense to do it. That's why I say in the book that monopolies need not apply. It makes no sense at all if you're a monopoly or pseudo-monopoly to give great customer service. If Comcast is the only internet service you can get in a given area, it doesn't make any sense for you to offer great customer service. I have a beach house up in Michigan. I wait 4 times for them to show up. They don't care. If I want internet service, guess what? I just have to wait. But for most businesses, you got to think about, in terms of dollars and cents, and we provide a way to do that in the book, what does it mean for you economically? The second thing you have to do is make sure, if it does mean something to you, you have to map the interactions with the customer to the importance of the company. And that goes back to what kind of skills, what kind of characteristics are we looking for in frontline staff people? And quite honestly, how are we going to train these people and empower them to make some decisions so every time they have to say, well, let me talk to my manager, that kind of defeats the purpose.
Absolutely. But, you know, even in, your Comcast cable up there in Michigan, perhaps they'll listen to this on one of our shows and respond to you, Barry. but even them, you know, there's satellite TV too, right? I mean, so there's alternatives. And any business who doesn't have time for providing a higher level of customer satisfaction or ensuring customer satisfaction at least – will have competition. If they don't have it today, even if they're having a monopoly, they will have competition. I mean, just ask someone at the airlines that question, right? So, or the banks, you know, the telecommunications companies. They thought they had that, or the utilities. So that world is changing. I don't think anybody can avoid that. How do you know really what it is your customers want, Barry? I mean, okay, you listen to them. It's an old, you listen to them. But what can you do to find out what they want?
Well, a lot of people say, well, all we have to do is put out surveys out there and people tell us what they want. And that's really a myth, because only the really happy people or the really angry people will really tell you what they think. You have to give customers the opportunity to give you feedback at every single point during the interaction with them, because and also consistently, because sometimes customers may be happy on a given day and sometimes the same customer might be upset. That's why customer service mark is so hard, because it changes from customer to customer, from day to day, from interaction to interaction. So you have to give them many opportunities to give you that kind of feedback. But you got to be careful, because when you ask for feedback, you got to make sure that you can handle the truth, right? You got to make sure that you're going to want to listen to what they say. It's kind of like Jack Nicholson in that movie, A Few Good Men. You can't handle the truth, right?
You can't handle the truth.
Don't ask for feedback unless you're going to do something about it, because that's probably the worst thing you can do. There's a great Domino's commercial on right now saying, hey, we heard from you that our products were crap. That's why we changed them, and this is what we did about it. And I think some of that is effective.
Yeah, but, you know, we talked about this too. Matt doesn't go for that change. And, you know, here's the thing. Did they lose more customers than they gained? Because there's a lot of folks who felt there should have been a transition maybe. So, I mean, that's kind of an interesting study. If you look at this and you say, well, maybe Domino's, you know, maybe they did a focus group and they got all the people in the focus group. That's why I think focus groups are a joke. Being a marketer, I know they're a joke. I happen to know they're a joke. But nevertheless, we hear what we want to hear. And so sometimes we have to be careful, because we can actually, by trying to deliver customer service, sometimes make a mistake. What are some – did you do some research to discover some of the big mistakes businesses made in delivering what was supposedly a higher level of customer service?
Sure. It's really interesting, because in the book we talk about how every business really should come out what we call a BAM good manifesto, which is some kind of declaration saying that what they're going to do for the customer. And again, some of the biggest mistakes is that, first of all, companies – don't deliver on what they promise. They make all these promises and they just don't deliver. What the customer really wants is for you just to keep your promise. And in the end, if the customer is dissatisfied, Mark, what they really want is they just really want to be listened to, knowing that their point of view is actually valid, that they're just not dreaming it up.
Mm-hmm. Boy, I mean, I think that is so true that these organizations that invest the time and effort and resources in having folks to just listen to the customer, they don't have to say, no, you're wrong, or no, yes, you're right. All they have to say is, thank you for sharing your opinion. We really appreciate it. That's all they have to say. And, you know, it's funny that is oftentimes the last thing that people say. What is your advice to business people, particularly small business people, people with, you know, $1 million, $2 million, $3 million company, trying to, you know, really, you know, build their organization into a bigger enterprise? What would be your top recommendation in terms of creating this BAM customer service? What could they do? What should they do? Other than, you know, listen to the customer, involve yourself in the social network. You've described all that, but what particular customer service initiatives work really well for small businesses?
I think you got to figure out, Mark, which are your best customers that are really providing you an economic return and which ones aren't. Too many small businesses hold on to customers that they think are profitable, really not, that they really should fire. And that is really weighing their business down. So there's a model in the book that talks about assigning 20 points to each one of your customers to figure out who's really making you money, who's giving you the referrals, which brands you want to hold on to, and which ones you want to let go. And some of those customers, you really got to figure out how to fire. I'd love in 2007 that Sprint let go of its 1,000 customers out of 53 million that were generating 40,000 customer service complaints calls a month. And they said, guess what? We don't need you anymore. Go to AT&T. Right? And so you got to let go of some of those customers that just really aren't there for you, and they're really holding you back from building your business.
Boy, that takes a lot of courage.
It does.
We call that strategic rejection, you know. Gary, talk about that in my book, strategic rejection, where we actually push people away in a nice way, you know, in a kind way, not in a mean way, but just let them know, you know, listen, and sometimes we can even refer them to the competition. I love this. I love referring them to the competition. This is so great. This ties up the competition with all the difficult customers, and I have the easy ones.
Exactly.
See what I'm saying?
Exactly.
Using strategic rejection. Well, I will say this. Customer service, if it's done in a BAM way, is a powerful
That's
way.
That's BAM good. BAM good.
BAM good is a powerful way to actually build your brand and to actually create some sort of that positive buzz without even spending any money. I mean, it's kind of like you don't have to spend money on advertising because they're going to believe you anyway, right? This is actually delivering it. Well, I want to encourage people, Barry, to get your book. It's called BAM, Delivering Customer Service in a Self-Serve World. I imagine that's available Amazon.com or wherever books are sold. Isn't that right?
You got it.
And
you got it.
Now, you do have a radio show, too. We'll refer people there. Do they just go to BarryMoltz.com and they can kind of click?
Yeah, they go to BarryMoltz.com. It's 9 a.m. Central Time on Fridays.
There you go. Well, good for you. BarryMoltz.com. Go check them out. Check out the book. Anything else you want to let our audience know, Barry, before we sign off?
I have this great button that I think everybody should wear when they go into a retail store. It says, just give me good customer service and nobody gets hurt.
Is it a real button? Can people get it on
it's
your website?
It's a real button. I can send you one.
I'd love to have one, actually.
All right, there you go. Put it in the mail.
If you send me one, I'll send you one of my books. There you go. And do you have
there
a fireplace?
You
have a fireplace, Barry?
I've got three of them.
Oh, well, then I'll send you three books because it makes good kindling if you don't want to read it.
There you go.
Okay. All right. Well, Barry Moltz, thank you so much for being with us, and you have yourself a great week. And go provide BAM customer service to your customers, okay?
All right. Thank you.
All right. Take care of yourself. All right, folks, that was Barry Moltz. You're listening to the Small Business Hour. Go nowhere. We will be right back.
The Small Business Hour is brought to you by CBeyond, the last communications company a small business will ever need.
CBeyond, big solutions for growing your small business. For over 10 years, CBeyond has provided small businesses with the communication tools for success. We're proud to offer services such as local and long-distance voice, mobile, and broadband internet access, along with enhanced features like voicemail, email, web hosting, data backup, file sharing, VPN, and more. So as your business grows, we've got you covered. See Beyond, the last communications company a small business will ever need.
Winning means sinking more shots, blowing away the competition, coming in first. Being second might have been okay for mom, but today, coming in second just gets you a pat on the back and a, hey, thanks for trying. Dale Carnegie Training gives you and your people the skills you need to win. For salespeople, how to be more strategic, earn and keep that important client. From prospecting to information gathering to negotiations to closing. For managers, it's how to win the commitment of your team. Build teamwork and loyalty like never before. A company where people excel. Dale Carnegie Training isn't some boot camp with a drill instructor who breaks you down and leaves you in a daze. And it isn't going back to school for years and pulling all-nighters while you're still trying to do your regular job. It's the right training for the real world that teaches you how to win more often. It works and it sticks. Call now, 562-427-1040. Face it, as a business owner, manager, or salesperson, you're paid for results, winning results. So make winning a habit. Call 562-427-1040. Come on, you were made to win. 562-427-1040.
Are compliance issues keeping you up at night? Are you worried that your labor law posters may be out of date? Do you even know how to protect your business from fines of thousands of dollars? Without a dedicated compliance department, it's hard to remain on top of the constantly evolving labor law legislation at the state and federal level. That's why the experts at Compliance Poster Company provide their clients with a dedicated research department. The innovator of the all-on-one compliance poster, Compliance Poster Company has simplified labor law compliance. Just hang one poster and you're in compliance with all federal and state labor law mandates. Then when labor laws change, you'll receive an email to let you know and your restless nights. Call the compliance experts at Compliance Poster Company today at 1-800-817-7678. That's 1-800-817-7678. Once again, 1-800-817-7678. Or on the web at ComplianceParticipants.com.
The Small Business Hour is brought to you by CBeyond, the last communications company a small business will ever need.
Okay, right. Okay, here we go. Matt, ready? Three,
okay,
two.
Give me 1 second here, Mark. I'm just starting a new audio file. So, all right, I'm rolling. Go ahead.
Okay, here we go. Three, two, one. All right, folks, welcome back to the Small Business Hour right here on the SBA Network. And in this segment, talking about really how to eliminate the busy work. So many things flying at us all day long, emails and drop-ins and unscheduled events. How do we stay focused? And with us today to talk about that and help us with that is author of the book, Do More Great Work, 7 Ways to Stop the Busy Work, Michael Stanier. And Michael, welcome to the Small Business Hour. Thank you for joining us this morning.
Mark, it's really good to be here, and I'm a small business owner myself, so I feel like I'm in very good company.
Oh, great. Well, glad to have you joining us today, and certainly this is a relevant topic, Michael. We all want to do great work. We all want to do more great work. It keeps us engaged, and it creates satisfaction in our lives, not to mention allows us to earn a living, and it seems like there's more busy work today, Michael, than ever before. Is that just a result of technology? What is driving that?
Yeah, you know, I think there's no doubt that technology is a really big driver behind that because, you know, these days, you know, we're connected on a gazillion different social media sites just to pick one part of technology alone. So as small business owners, we're sort of going, okay, I've got my email to worry about. Well, I've got my website I need to do. I probably should have a blog. And now I need to Twitter and it keeps growing. So, you know, we could easily spend our whole lives just sort of processing electronic data to and from and trying to build our reputation and profile online. That alone could consume our lives, let alone all the other stuff we have to do as small business owners.
Boy, isn't that the truth. And certainly those things at the right time are important and perhaps at the right time are priorities. But they themselves, because of the nature that they are constantly knocking at our doors, we're constantly and of course now, you know, we have these electronic devices we carry around, and I have one myself which I love, and it you know, it's I'm either getting an email or I'm getting a text message or an instant message or a tweet, or you know, something is happening nearly all the time. Of course, this can get in the way of good work. Have you done any studies, or have you done some research in writing this book in determining if, in fact, people are less focused and less able to stay focused on getting good work done? Is that something you've looked at, Michael?
Yeah, well, you know, there's a great deal of research at the moment, particularly in the field of neuroscience. So neuroscience is such an exciting field because basically these days with electromagnetic resonating, we can actually see how our brains work, and we can see how our brains react to stimuli coming at us. And one of the key findings from neuroscience is that the constant interruptions that we have with emails or with a little buzzy BlackBerry attached to our belt, it keeps getting in the way of you being able to focus and drop down into great work. Now, I mean, there's basically two types of work, just to set this up. Good work is, you know, the sort of productive, efficient, getting things done type of work that we all need to do. It's a critical part of any small business owner's life. Mm-hmm. But then there's that great work you're talking about, which is not just meaningful and engaging and fulfilling, which is what you talked about, but actually it's the work that helps you be strategic and be innovative and actually differentiate your business and grow it for the long term, not just grow it for next month's revenue coming in or the next quarterly results. So it's critical for us, not just on a personal level, but actually on a strategic level, to be doing more great work. And what neuroscience is telling us is that if we are at the back and the core of our BlackBerry or our email, it's very difficult to actually give yourself the thinking time and the planning time you need to actually do your best work, to think about strategically how you need to grow your business, to be creative about what products and services you bring your customers. And the price of constant connectivity is a reduction on the impact you have in the world.
Mm. So that's fascinating. So the very thing that seems to be dominating the news and dominating what is sort of the hip thing to do these days is the very thing that is getting in the way of doing the kind of work that we need to be doing, which is the planning and sort of the visionary work and the non-urgent but very proactive work that is required. So let's kind of think about this now. We're kind of inundated with relationships today, and one of the points you make in the book I thought was very interesting was to sort of pick three or four or five people that are kind of your core people that really matter. You define it as the A-list people or the B-list people, and being able to say no to the C-list people. And when I read that, I thought, gee, I wonder how many folks that I know have me on the C-list.
Yeah, right.
That's immediately what I thought. I thought, I wonder how do I get on the A-list. Talk to us about that knowing who matters.
Sure. Well, so here's the thing about doing great work. You need to do and continue to do great work. You need three things. You need focus, you need courage, and you need resilience. Now, focus is all about what's important to me and what's important to my small business. Where do I put my attention, and where do I actually grow my great work project? So I'm fulfilled, but also my business continues to evolve. That's great, and we've sort of talked about that a bit. But you need courage, because actually to do great work, you can't make everybody happy. And a lot of us are wired up, particularly, actually, I think, if you're a small business owner, to try and please everybody. And you know what? It's impossible. It's a miserable task to set yourself. And it just ends up with you exhausting yourself and actually not everybody being happy anyway. So this is all about getting strategic as to who really matters, because not everybody matters the same. So actually, and this is one of the sort of counterintuitive truths about doing great work, which is if everybody's happy, you're not doing great work. It's actually a metric of success if there are a few people who are a little, their noses out of joint, or they're a little upset because you're not giving them the attention they're asking for. So actually focus on, you know, which of your customers really matter? which of your employees, if you have employees, really matter? Which of your suppliers really matter? And there are some of those who will matter more to you than others.
So don't
In the book, I say, look, define an A-list. Three top people whose relationship you have to nurture. Yeah. Define a B-list, five more people who you want to keep happy, who you also relationships you need to tender. And then with the people who are left, I'm not saying go out and be rude to them and diss them just for the sake of it. I am saying that those are people with whom you may be able to say, I can give you less time, less effort, less focus for the sake of giving the people who really matter the care and nurturing that they require.
Wow. Well,
that's the courage bit I'm talking about, because
that's the courage bit. Yeah.
It's like, whew, you know, I'm not sure if I really want to do that. But the price of keeping everybody happy is doing less great work. And my call is, life's too short not to do great work.
One of the things we talk about all the time in our seminars and with our clients is that conflict is not necessarily bad. And sometimes this might incite some conflict that, you know, especially if we're not careful about how we do this. We've got to do this in a very polite and diplomatic way. But at the same time, it's not necessarily bad to have some of that tension so that people, you know, the people who are important to us are getting the time, and the people who are not, perhaps they need to find ways to become more important. And it creates a bit of attraction. But that's a very interesting concept. I think that probably runs against the grain. Another thing you talk about in the book, Michael, is the fact that meetings oftentimes are and can very much be a waste of time. One company I used to work with is Robinson Helicopter, and the CEO of Robinson Helicopter is, of course, very, very successful man, but also a man who does not believe in meetings. And I've actually seen him break up meetings in his office. This was many years ago. Of course, it's become a culture.
You know, I mean, there's all those jokes going around on the internet. It's like, if you've got something you really don't want to do, call a meeting and that will put it off for a while.
That's so true.
Now, there is a place for meetings. Just a whole lot fewer meetings than are currently happening. And it's really worth thinking about a couple of things. One is, what is the fastest way we can have this meeting? If we have to gather people together, what's the fastest way, what's the most focused way we can make this meeting happen? And part of the problem is that when you gather people into a room and everybody sits down, everybody gets comfortable. Everybody goes, we have to fill up the time allotted to this. So if you say we've got a one-hour meeting, the meeting lasts for an hour. However, if you start changing your one-hour meetings to 30-minute meetings or your 30-minute meetings to 15-minute meetings, what that's going to do is it's going to focus your attention. At Google, which is hardly a small business but a successful one, and one that a lot of us would like to emulate, at Google they actually project a 4-foot clock onto the wall so everybody is absolutely clear just the cost of the resource that's in the room, because every time you pull people into a meeting, you're pulling them away from something that might be more important for them to do. So, yeah, be ruthless about meetings. I talk about McKinseyfying your meetings, and you'll know this. McKinsey is a very successful business consultancy, and every year they prune the bottom 10% of their consultants as a way of continuing to increase the excellence in their firm.
Right.
I want people to prune the bottom 10% of their meetings and keep pruning it till what you have left is essential and nothing else.
Another great thing that folks can do, I don't know if you mentioned this in the book, but is standing meetings. Standing meetings oftentimes are very successful in keeping people engaged. I guess there's all sorts of tricks that can be done, you know, beginning with the most difficult item in the meeting, you know, agreeing to no warm-up time, you know, stuff like this, you know, really can be a time saver. In terms
you've listed some really great tips there, and you know, if you Google better meetings, you will find a range of different tips. The tips are the easy bit; it's actually implementing the tips of the challenge.
And tough part,
The people listening to do is going, I need to shift the meeting culture in my company. Whether you're a tiny small business or a, you know, a bigger small business, my bet that meetings are taking away from great work time, and that's terrible.
Yeah. Now you also talk in the book, this is kind of interesting, about sort of changing even the way you're sitting, changing the way, where you do certain work. You even mentioned doing it in an empty room or working in the cafeteria one time. Why is that important? Is that, that has to do with that neuro? I know you're a Rhodes Scholar, so you probably have a great scientific reason for this.
Yeah, well, you know, it does connect back to the neuroscience piece and actually thinking about how our brain works. So, and this is, as you say, one of the tips from the Do More Great Work book, that when you come in at the start of your day, and what most of us do is we crank open the computer, laptop or whatever, and we start processing emails. And we sort of lock ourselves into the efficient processing, getting things done frame of mind. Mm-hmm. And what happens is our body actually leads our brain. The way we sit actually tells our brain how to operate. So when we sit in our familiar good work chair in front of our familiar good work computer and we start doing productive good work stuff, our brain locks into this is what it's all about. And before you know it, the whole day's gone and you've done a lot of good work, but you haven't tapped into your great work. So one of the ways you can change the way you think is change the way your body is. So change your context. And as you, just as you said, there's a numerous different ways you can do that. You know, go to a different meeting room. Shift places in your desk and clear a spot on your desk which you hold for doing great work. In my little office, I actually had two desks, one for good work and one which doesn't have any technology on it for my great work thinking. Go down the road to a coffee shop. You know, walk up and down the halls and make a, you know, go for a walk and make that your great work walk. But get out of the familiar good work stands and open your, change your body and your brain will find it easier to do great work.
Yeah, I have an interesting example that happened to me yesterday, literally yesterday. I have been trying to do this presentation for one of the many presentations I have to do, a PowerPoint, over the next couple of weeks. And I've been trying to do this for 2 weeks. And I've sort of gotten started on it, and I haven't been able to connect with it. And I have a place, a very nice office in my home here that I do most of my good work, and it's very private. It's very nice. But yesterday, I had an opportunity to sit upstairs in my sort of what we call our lounge. This is kind of a sitting room, and I have a computer up there too. And I actually started to do this project. Do you know that I finished this project in less than an hour? And I thought it was great when I finished it, and it was not in my normal place. And I was, and that, I bet you that has, and I don't even know why I went up there to do it, but perhaps my brain was trying to tell me something that resonates, I think, with what you're talking about here today.
Exactly right. And, you know, I mean, nobody's really done a whole lot of great work thinking while they've been processing their emails. But you know that you have ideas up in the lounge or in the shower or in the coffee shop or on the walk. So it's tapping into that. Get your body out of the usual routine, and new stuff, new thoughts, new strategies will actually start showing up for you.
Well, thank you so much, Michael. This is fascinating stuff. People obviously can get the book, Amazon.com or Barnes & Noble, wherever books are sold, I assume. And the name of the book, again, folks, is Do More Great Work, Stop the Busy Work, and Start the Work That Matters. And it is by Michael Stanier. And check it out. I really highly recommend the book. Anything else that you feel would be valuable to our listeners before we sign off with you, Michael?
Well, I just encourage people to go to the Do More Great Work website, domoregreatwork.com. There's actually a bunch of free resources, including free podcasts, sort of like the one we're doing at the moment, where I interview all sorts of people, including small business owners, around their approach and their strategies to do more great work. So I'd love you to pick up the book, but you don't have to. If you go to the website, you can actually dial into a bunch of free stuff that will help you do more great work and do less of the other stuff.
There you go. There you go. Well, thank you so much for being with us, Michael. And folks, check out the book, Do More Great Work, Stop the Busy Work, and Start the Work That Matters. And it's Michael Stanier. Thank you so much, Michael. Take care of yourself today.
Thanks, Mark.
Okay, folks, that was Michael Stanier, author of the book, Do More Great Work. Check it out anywhere books are sold. Well, folks, well, we covered a lot of ground, tremendous amount of ground here today on the Small Business Hour. Talked about customer service earlier. And what makes, bam, customer service. Love to do that. Any opportunity
I get. You're still on that bam customer service.
Yeah, just in the middle of it, bam, just like that. It's like Tourette's. And that's how customer service should be. We're mm-hmm. just going out of our way to exceed the expectations of customers. Also talked about how to get great work done with our guest, Michael Steiner. Check out his book, Doing More Great Work. The irritation of Mark Dio, hopefully the irritation of you too, by big banks mm-hmm. Handing out money to big companies with your tax dollars. Man, that doesn't get you. I don't know what does. And, of course, a lot more coming, Matthew. You know, we have a lot of great guests that will be joining us here in the future. Of course, we have Dave Meadows next mm-hmm. week will be our guest.
And we'll check in with the American Small Business League.
Yes, and Harvey McKay. Harvey McKay will be coming on the show. I haven't heard from Harvey McKay, of the famed Swim with the Sharks without getting eaten alive. Now he's written a book mm-hmm. on, you know, how to find a great job. And, you know, interesting thing about Harvey McKay, he's actually – If you buy his book, Matthew, and you don't get a job,
mm-hmm.
He gives you your money back for the book.
It's kind awesome.
Of interesting refund policy. So nevertheless, stay tuned to the Small Business Hour. Every single Monday, we post a new show, and we'd love to count you as one of our listeners. Obviously, you are because you're hearing my voice.
Mm-hmm.
But to continue to listen. Matthew, are we doing more comedy, or have you finally given up on that
Of course, I'm doing more comedy. I'll be up in Bakersfield this weekend, so you can check me out up there. Or just go to funnymat.com for more information.
Also, a bunch of events. We have a new sales class starting, which will begin on February 1st. March 1st, what am I saying? March 1st will be our new sales class. And on March 2nd, we'll be doing a class on due diligence for investors, Matthew, in order to ensure getting your due diligence done, because these days we got to make sure that whatever investments we get involved in are really going to pan out. So I'll be doing a seminar with some very very talented people, an attorney who specializes in this, Sean Griffith, of course, that works with our company, and also a CPA and an investment expert. So there'll be a panel, and you'll be able to ask questions of anyone on the panel. I hope I get some questions. I always feel mm-hmm. bad if I'm on that panel and no one's asking me a question. Really, yeah. Big sign that things didn't go well. But nevertheless, do check those events out, and you can find it all at smallbusinesshour.com. Thank you so much for listening, and do this week. Have a positive, productive, and a very profitable week. We'll see you next week.
The Small Business Hour is brought to you by CBeyond, the last communications company a small business will ever need.